today we're going to start on the Mishnah and Mem Zayin Hamud Bet. So if he says, Harini Alech Chayrim, right, so if he says, I am to you a Chayrim, so Chayrim is a term we've bumped into before, right, that the Gemara Nedarim discussed what the word Chayrim meant, right, depending if you're in the Yehuda or the Galil. Right, so then here the Ram points out, he thinks that it's Stam Charamim Lehekdesh, because that's why it's in the Galil Mairi, that he's talking about a person's in the Galil, and therefore the term Chayrim really means Hekdesh, or Lebedek Abayis. So he's using it as a, right, as a kinoi, or yeah, to make it Asur, it's Harialech Chayrim, I am like, to you, like Hekdesh, right? So Hamudur Asur, then the one who was had the nether taken about, the object of the nether is Asur and Hanoah from the one who took the nether, Madir. Hariat Alai Chayrim, whereas if the person said, you are to me a Chayrim, then Hanoder Asur. Then the one who took the nether, the Madir, right, is Asur and getting benefit from the Mudar. Harini Alakha Ba'at Alai Shnehem Asur. So if he does it in both directions, then they are both Asur. Shnehem Mutarim. Once they are both Asur, then what's the status? Shnehem Mutarim B'davar Shel Olei Bavel, V'Asurim B'davar Shel Otair. So if they restrict each other, right, then there's categories, different categories here, which we'll discuss in the Mishnah in a second, but that is Davar Shel Olei Bavel. Any item that was made by Olei Bavel, which became a public service, basically, something that was a public service that has no ownership. It is more of a communal benefit, but does entail specific ownership. Right? For instance, like water, bores, and wells that they dug along the way, or fixed the Rachim inter-city highways. Right? Those types of things which aren't owned by anybody, but are more like a central government or a federal government. And then they are mutar in, because they don't really have any ownership in those items. Even the participants in that government of that area, but there's no specific ownership that would restrict them. Whereas, Asurim Midabar Shel Otair, whereas when it's something within the city itself, that they are restricted in. Because in items that are in the city, that is a community effort or a joint effort where they do own a portion of the item. Ezu Dabar Shel Olei Bavel. What's something belongs to Olei Bavel? Kogon Har Abayit, Vazarot, Vabor, Shvem Zaderech. Right, that's a Temple Mount. Yezarot, right, the areas around in the Mikdash itself, the areas in the storage areas or the rooms around it, Babur Shabem Sederech, or a water pit along the way. Right, these are all items that are generally for the benefit of everyone, but not owned by anyone. Right, the Ezu Dabar Shel Otair, what's something that belongs to the city? Kagon, Harachava. Streets in the city, Barmerchatz, the bathhouse, the public bathhouse, the Beit HaKnesset, the shul, Teva, and the, I would have thought Teva here would mean what? The Teva would be the place that they put the Sefer Torah, right? Like the Aron, whereas the Rishon, some of the Rishon here mention it, the Ron mentions it here, is the Teva being, Shinot in Allah, Sefer Torah, the Krot, it's the Bima.
Yeah.
Right. Where is it?
And translated here as the Ark.
Right. That's the usage of Teva, and also in the Netanis is used more. It sounds like
lifting a Teva, over lifting a Teva.
Exactly. So I'm surprised that the Ron translated it where they read the Torah on it, that is the Bima. But, alright. The Hasfarim are the Sifrei Torah, right? And the Bim, that which they read from. So all of these are items that are jointly owned by each member of the city. Since they are jointly owned by each member of the city, therefore, if I use that item, or if one of the two parties uses that item, they're benefiting from the other party. Because here we are talking about private ownership, right, in their day. Because there's no, this is the, and you still have it somewhat today, but not totally, that the city would comprise of private ownership, whereas things that are only above L were intercity items, or larger items than a single city, and those weren't privately owned. But a city itself and the shuls in the city were all privately owned, and therefore they could actually be sold and transacted with. So since they are owned by everyone, if you benefit from any item there, you're benefiting also from that portion, that indivisible portion that belongs to the person that you're asking about. No, right?
Would you say that someone who holds this opinion will say, would also, I don't know, be based on, let's say, you know, the vitor, that in vitor is,
right.
Is also because it's such a small, you know, fraction of ownership. You think it should be considered, you know, you've got a town of 5,000, even 1,000 people, and
right.
A small town, right? It's 1/1,000th of,
yeah.
You know, of the ownership.
Right. I agree with you. I think it sounds small, but it depends how big the town is, right? It could be something that's bigger, right? I mean, it could be...
Population 10.
Right? I mean, there's a possibility that it's much bigger. That's one. Number two is, here, vitor eser also means that it's an amount that we don't care about, like something, an item, like grisus regula and other things like this. But these might be significant ownerships in a way that somebody could be mocked.
The importance of the item itself.
Right.
Is
more than, when we talk about Jesus, we're talking about other things. These are things that people are not mocked on.
Hmm.
Whereas over here, these are items that people are mocked on, and therefore maybe it is. But I definitely hear what you're saying. We actually did bring this Gemara earlier in this parak as a proof to the one who said, right, to, I think, Rav Yosef, who suggested that we were talking about in our Mishnah. It's talking about a Sada She'emba Chalukah, yeah, Rav Yosef, who says it's a Makom, that it was Katzer She'emba Chalukah, because these are all items that are indivisible, right, and yet is still Asur. Right, so now, but who writes his portion to the Nasi? Now, obviously, this seems like a non sequitur. It doesn't seem to belong to the list at all. And the Gemara is going to deal with that it doesn't make any sense. Right? Right? It doesn't matter. You can write your property over to the Nasi, or you can give it to another person. What's the difference between whether you give your property to the Nasi or the Hedjot? Shakotiv Nasi and Tzarech Liskot. That a person who gives his property to the Nasi happens without any kinyan. You don't require a third-party kinyan to make it happen. That yo, it's directly scoped. That someone has to be soche on behalf of the receiving party in order to have it be effective. No, you always need a kinyan by a third party to be soche, right? Even when you're soche in la adam shalobafana, someone has to make a kinyan on his behalf. Someone has to receive it on his behalf. Lo dibre b'nasi ala b'hoveh. They just started with the Nasi because that was a usual happenstance circumstance. So why is it a usual circumstance? So that the Ron says is because, what's the idea here? I'm going to give away partly what the Gemara is going to say later on, but the fact was that they gave, it's only in a couple minutes, but the Gemara says here that what they did was to avoid the problem of him getting benefit or another party getting benefit, they used to write over their property to a third party. They give up their property to a third party, and then...
Meaning like their share in the municipal community?
Exactly. Their share in the Beit Knesset, their share in the Sefer Torah, they give over to a third party. So when they give it over to a third party, right now, it's not a problem for the other person to get benefit from it, because it's not owned by them anymore. Right, so now the Ron says that. What does it mean, lo dibru ela b'hoveh? Means that there are other people, if they give it over to another private individual, they were scared that he'd also ask them in Hanoh. Mm-hmm. And that just giving it over to another individual just moves the problem to another private citizen. Right, so if you give it to the Nasi, the assumption was that the Nasi was above all this. Right?
Responsible for the whole community.
Right, he wouldn't ask anybody in Hanoh. Alright, so that's... that's the question that the Ron asks. What's the chiddush here according to the Rabbanan? We've had three Mishnayos already, two Mishnayos already, that told us that you can, if you are asur on us someone else, you can give it to a third party. You can be mafkir, you can give it to a third party. We have all these cases already. What's the point of the Mishnah? So he wants to suggest here that even if you give up the property to a third party, you still use the shul. You still use the Sefer Torah. So is this really considered a harama or not? And that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. It's not considered a harama. When you give up your property to the Nasi, you give it up to another individual, that works, even though you continue to use them as you did before.
But the ownership.
Right, the ownership component is removed, even though it looks like you've done nothing. Because you're still showing up at the shul, you're still using the Sefer Torah, mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it's good enough. And that's the chiddush of the chachamim here. Very good. Okay, yeah, and to answer your question, it's a good thing I'm looking around because I forgot that. He says, I'll just read it to you, the line quickly. Umasnisin diktani vasur medavar sholteir rabbanan hi below Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. It's rabbanan and not Rabbi Elazar. Tamar le'el debay knesset kechasur shem badin chaluka dami. Hilka came into sika hilka zalel Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov like the masnisin. So he says that because we passed him like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov earlier, then this mishnah is useless because the isser of otayir is only according to the rabbanan. right? This is all according to the Rabbanim. We pass them like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov.
Because as far as prayer is concerned,
what?
That
you can be over a darbar that doesn't belong to him, right? So he says it doesn't. It's not meaningful in the sense in this side here. So it's not. Again, Rabbi Elazar, you talked about vitur, which is another topic, right? But we do hold vitur as also. Right, so that might be still the case both that year, but with regards to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Rabbanon, no, it's like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov loved Reva, and therefore this Mishnah is not meaningful in the context of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. That's what the Ran says. The Rambam happens to pass him the other way. Avon passed him like our Mishnah, and passed him like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Ran says he doesn't understand. He says the Ramban asked that question on him, but how could he pass him like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and then pass him like our Mishnah if our Mishnah is going according to the Chacham?
Yeah.
Right. Alright, last line in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Einan Shigalil Tzrichim Lichtov. Einan Shigalil, you don't have to write your stuff over to Nasi. Shekvar Kitzvuat Vuteyam Ayudehem. That's already, it was done before them. I mean, it was already taken care of. Their forefathers already gave it over to Nasi. Now the Gemara says, Amai Mitzah. Why is he Asur? I mean, that in the list of items that we said that there were Asur Ba'ota Ayir, we said the Merchot Zbei Knesset Teva Svarim Vakotev Chelko De Nasi. Why is the portion that he wrote over to Nasi Asur? It doesn't make any sense, right? Hochitani. So this is the Chasuri Mechsera. Uma takantan takanatan. Right? It's an important word to leave out. Right? After the list of what's Azur, how do you rectify the problem? The answer is, Yichkatfu Chalkan Lenasi. They'll give over their portion to the Nasi. And that's how they'll solve the problem. That's what I gave it away to you, that was the solution to the problem. But it's not part of the list of the things that are Asur. There's some stop. There's a stop after the word Sparim. And then it says, how do you rectify it? Matakanatam. Then you say, Akodev Koko the Nasi, right? Then he writes his property over to the Nasi. Right? The parentheses we can skip. That's not the, not really relevant to us. I mean, not relevant. It's relevant, but it's just a quote of the Mishnah and doesn't seem to belong here. Right? Rabbi Hudo Omer, Einan Shagalu Tzrichim Liskot Shabar Katvu Avotam Ayudahem. What does that mean? So, Tanya Rabbi Hudo Omer, Anshe Galil Katranin Hayu. They were, let's call them, easy to anger. They were had a temper.
Chronic complainers.
Right. Had a lot of tempers. How you know Jim Hanan is Zemizet. So you see this as, again, this was a tool, a social tool in their day, where they were asking Hanan one and the other on a regular basis. So here these guys were hot-tempered individuals.
I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
Right, so they used to ask each other in Hana. So what did their forefathers do? They preempted the problem and wrote all the public property into, gave it over to the Nasi. So at least if they did get these Nadarim out, that the person would not be restricted in using the public properties in those cities because they wouldn't have, nobody owned them anymore. It was all owned by the Nasi. Okay, next Mishnah. What?
That's a good
idea. Cantankerous. That's a good word. Very good. Not tempered.
Maybe it derives from
it's interesting. Yeah. All right, Mishnah here. This Mishnah is the famous Mishnah that we've been quoting numerous times. We've spoken about it numerous times, and this is the Mishnah of Beit Chogram. Right. So Hamudar Hanami Chaveru Ben Lo Mayocha. So this introduction is not meaningful. It's just to get us back to the topic because we've seen this. This was mentioned in a Mishnah earlier. Said if someone who is restricted enough from his friend has nothing to eat, no Tulachar the Shem Latana B'Halam Mutarba. That's if you give it to a gift to a third party, then he's allowed to use it. So we've seen that before in the Mishnah. That's nothing new. Now here it comes. Ma'ase be'echad bebeit chorom. This is the case of chorom. Shehaya aviv mudar hamenu hana. His father was restricted in getting hana from him. Haya masiyat bino. Now he was marrying off his son, the grandchild of the one who's restricted in hana. Va'amar v'chaveru chatzer v'sudan etunim heinan lefanecha. I'm giving you, or Enam Lepanecha, they're not for you, Elekadesh Yehu, Abba Biyocholi Manobasudas. Now, my father can come join us in the wedding. So here is a father, right? Here is Yaakov. Yaakov restricted his father, Yitzchak, from getting any Hanah from him. And his son, Reuven, is getting married now. So Yaakov's throwing a chasna for his son, Reuven. And he wants his father, Yitzchak, to come to the party. The problem is that he answered his father, Yitzchak, and any benefit from him. So what does he do? He gives over all his property to another individual. He says, I'm giving it over to you so that my father can come to the party. So Amar, him shalihim, the third party was a smart guy, says, if they're mine, harihim muktashim l'shamayim, they're hektish. Amar lai, what? Lo natati l'chad shalih, shetaktishim l'shamayim. I didn't give you my stuff to make him hektish. I give them to you so that we can come and party together over here. You only gave them to me so that you and your father could be partying together and be happy with each other and reconcile your differences. Right? And avon will be sitting on my head. I mean that you're just using me as a vehicle to violate the nether. Because you're not really gifting it to me. If you gifted it to me, I could be makdish.
So that's why he said, so with friends like that, I mean, right. But really he was
pointing out that he was
just wasn't preventing. He realized that it was just harama.
Right. You know, he was pointing out the harama in this sense. So amru chachamim komatana sheim hikdisha tehei mukdashit enu matana. So the chachamim even formulate their statement based on this guy's, you know, catching the harama by saying that if you don't have enough ownership to be makdish it, then it's not considered a gift. If it's not a gift, then it's not right enough. It's not out of your possession enough to allow the other party to get benefit from it, hana from it. So my basic question is, I will point out, Joel has to do better on Shabbos, and you know, I give a different answer, then I still think it's the right answer, but the Ryan asks the question of matan omanat lahachzir, a gift that is dependent on you returning it. So you cannot be makdish a gift that's omanat lahachzir. How come?
That works.
How come that's a matana? The Ryan asks that question. How come? So when Joel asked me it, I think I give him the answer, which is that matan omanat lahachzir includes within it a condition. Right? What's the condition? The condition is that you have to return it at the end. If you're makdish it, then you're unable to return it in the end. If you're unable to return it in the end, then the original gift goes away. Beautiful. Right? So that's the problem if you violate, right? If you make it hektesh, right, and you violate that.
If he gives something for a limited time.
Yes, the hefker, the shell. Right, we had that limited time hefker. So that's what he was asking about then. But I'm not an axer, why does it work here? So that was my answer to him. But here, you see that here you have a matana, right? And he conditions it on being, I'm only giving you a matana if you let me and my father and all that go. So he said to me, well, what matana not axer? Why isn't that also a problem? Because you don't own it enough to be makdish. So I said, well, that violates the tanai. Tanai goes, and the matana goes away. I said, over here, too. So he says, well, over here, I said, over here, you have a condition that what? That it must, you use it to have my father come to the party. If you're makdish, then what happens? Then you violate the tanai, right? Or if I could be makdish, you would violate the tanai. If you violate the tanai, then it's back to his ownership. Because you violate the tanai, he doesn't own it. If he owns it, then his father can't get a benefit from it. And so the outcome is, right, again, the outcome is the same, but it has different implications. Here, the problem is that you want it out of your possession, right? Over there, the buyer, the one who's receiving the matana, needs it in his possession because he wants to do something. For instance, lulav. He wants to be yotzei lulav, so he needs it in his possession. So if he violates the tanai, then it goes back to the original guy, and he's not yotzei. Right? Whereas over here, if the tanai is violated, it goes back to the original owner, and it's the original owner who wants it out of his possession. Right? And so therefore, if there's a violation of the tanai, then it ends up being a problem, not, you know, for him. In that sense, that's how he answered it at the time. To Ryan here is a different answer, because he says matana manach nahakzir. He says shani hasam to mekum akum l'shata matana hi. For the period of time that is a matana, it's a full matana. Whereas over here, about matana zusha bekrona pilu shata ina shalot kavin l'gnot l'okval. It wasn't even a gift for a period of time because he didn't really intend to give it to him. It was all harama. He was just trying to get around the problem of the iser hano. And he was just pretending that he was giving it to the guy, but he never really gave it with a full heart. Ron suggests that it's a different type of gifting. By matana malach lahachzir, you intend to give it as a full-fledged gift. Whereas over here, this guy never intended to give it as a gift, and that's what he caught him by saying, I'm being makdish, and he caught him.
It's for environments, so maybe it's the guy really wants him to film this, and say that really, you know, believe Shalom, he wants it to be his. But if it's something else, matana malach lahachzir, it can be reasonably certain he doesn't want him to then go and be makdish it. You know, not like a little bit.
It doesn't work. I mean, right. The Ron says it doesn't work if you're makdish it. Right?
So,
because you violate the tanai.
And really see the.
Right. So that's what I suggest. That's the Ron's decision. I suggested on Shabbos that it was a problem with the violation of the tanai. which undermines the matana. Again, then if it underlines the matana, whose problem is it? Depends on the case. In the case of like lulav, it's the problem of the recipient, right? Whereas here, if the tanai is violated, right, and returns, it's the problem of the giver because he needs to get it out of his possession, and therefore it'll be a problem. All right, just pointing out that was it. Now Gemara says, "Masha lustor." Gemara asks all the time. We had a position up front in the Gemara that you can give a gift to get around a Yisra HaNoah. That was the first line in the Mishnah. Then you bring a Maisa Beit Choron, which is exactly not that. You gave a gift and it doesn't work. So what's the point of bringing the Maisa down? So Gemara says, Asurim Achzer Al Achitayim. V'im Ho'chiach Sofal Tchilato Asur. But if it's clear from the end game that, what? That it wasn't its intent to give the gift, then it's Asur. Maisa Nami Beit Choron. There was a Maisa by Beit Choron, Be'echad Tehavos. Where the end proved that he really didn't gift it. I mean, the fact that he tried to be makdish and the guy said, I didn't give it to you for that, that means what? We proved that he never really gifted it. Amar Rava. How good a gift does it have to be? We're going to have two Lashonos in Rava discussing whether how good a gift this really has to be, or how do we know he's cheating versus giving the gift. All right, so Amar Rava. Lo Shana Lada Amar Lei. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where he says explicitly in this condition, I'm only giving it to you, right? And it's only if you allow my father to come to this. There he's basically making a condition in the gift that his father must be there. So that's clear that the reason he's giving it is for the benefit of his father. That's not a good gift. Right? If he says that they should be before you, that my father should come, then midatchahu, right, Damalei. And then he's really giving the receiver of the gift the option. He's suggesting, I'm giving it to you because I want my father to come, but it's not a condition in the gift. It's not a condition in the gift. In the end, if he does invite his father, then it's on the, what? It's on the acquiescence or the decision of the receiver of the gift. So Rava differentiates. Rava says, how do I know it's Harama? It's Harama when the condition of the gift is that my father shows up. If you make a strong suggestion that you want your father to show up, then it's not a condition in the gift. And that's okay, because you didn't condition the gift on it. And then in the end, if his father does come, that's the decision of the third party, the party that he gave it to. That's the first question in Rava.
I don't know if that, like by wills, let's say, person can leave over property and make specific stipulations, you know, this can only be used, you know, for X or this, you know, belongs to X, but it can never be given to Y. Is it that such conditions in a will are effective?
Only if it's a living will, meaning that you're not in the law. If it, once he dies, he can't condition that, but it's only if before he...
Sure.
But the way halakhic wills work is that everything's gifted prior to death. And then, so you can condition. When you give a gift, you can put any condition.
I'm talking about to his property ownership. There's many places like certain restrictions.
That's a common secular practice in Wells. I don't know if it has halakha to it. We had before that you can ask Rahanoah in the property that's received, you know.
Because it's having the ability to
ask for something that's in possession later. Right, but that's not, I think, halakha Wells, but it's the same thing. Halakha works, right, is that a minute before you die, you gift everything, and then you gift it with conditions. That you can do, but here it's not a. Here, the problem is it a gift or not? And that's it. If he conditions it on his father coming, then Rava says it's haroma. If he says makes a strong suggestion of what to do with it, then it's not a haroma anymore. It's a gift. Now, even in your case, even if you were to say you're right that in a will after death you can say this is what the money has to be used for, that's a condition of the will. Then over there, it's not. He's not. It's not a haroma in a sense. He's not trying to gift it in order to get around something else, right? That's it. The guy's entitled to it because it's his Yerusha. He's just making a tonight in Yerusha. So again, I would suggest strongly that he can't make a condition in Yerusha, because we said before, even if he asks him, no, the Yerusha still goes through and he owns it. He owns it, he just can't get benefit from it. Right, so... Yeah, I think they would have to be conditioned on a gift given before death to make that effective.
Okay, you're going to give it before death. How can you include stipulations?
Yeah, because it's a gift. It's a regular gift. I mean, you can stipulate what you want in a gift. Here, the problem is that he has an Isra Hanoah hanging over. If the gift doesn't work, he's in trouble, because then it's his. Right, but in that case, if the gift doesn't work, it just reverts back to him and then goes into the pot for Yerusha, or goes back to whatever.
The other principle we're saying is that if the other person has control, essentially to do whatever he wants with it, then it's a valid gift. If he doesn't, then it's not a valid gift.
It's probably not a fair statement. It's a valid gift or not a valid gift. It's a question of what he's trying to do, if he's trying to give over ownership or not. In the case of, in our case, again, the failure of the gift to work lands it back in the giver's hands, right? Which isn't so bad, because that's bad in the case of a neder, because that's exactly what he doesn't want. In case like Yerusha, where he gives it, if it ends back in his possession, that's not what he does. That's fine if he gets it back. I mean, if the gift fails...
Well, yes, so I can give you a gift, and I can say, I'll give this to you as long as you commit that you won't use it for X.
Right.
So if you're saying, you know, it's business advice, if you accept that stipulation,
right.
Fine, then you're accepting it exactly the way I gave it. Right. So then there's no problem.
But over here, the whole point is that he's not really giving it. That's a test of whether he's giving it or not. And here there's an exogenous variable, which we're saying is driving him to give it away, which is the Isra and Noah. And he's not really gifting it, because the fact that he conditions it on that, getting around that Isra and Noah, means that and that's not really a gift. He's just trying to circumvent the problem that he has. Right? So now the Gemara says, so now that's one condition of Rava. Lishnach Rina, which I think we would all have said, this sounds more like what, you know, we would have said, this Lishnach Rina. Amrin La, some people say, Amar Rava lo teima taimo damarlei v'heinan lefenecha, not when he specifically conditions the gift on it being used for his father. Even if he doesn't make it a condition, but he makes a suggestion, that's enough to what, make it not a real gift, to make it haromo. So Rava says any mention of the father, right, in the gift already makes it into haromo. The fact that he, whether it's a tenai in the gift or whether it's a strong suggestion in the gift, right, both of those will make it clear that he's not really gifting it for any other reason except to get around the nether. My time up. What's the reasoning? Why, even if he doesn't explicitly mention his father, is su'udato mochechat alav. His su'uda proves that which is happening, right? So we are... Right, we are clear from the su'uda that what? That's what his intent is. And so that we can see what he really wanted to do. And I think the Ran suggests, what does it mean, Sudata Mukhechet Alav, is because, basically, why would this, in that the fact that the father's coming to the party, and he doesn't say here the Ran, I think the Ran says later on, that why do we want the father to come to the party? It's not because, say, if he gives it away to a third party to make the Kasna, then if this third party invites the father to come, that's not the Hana. That's not what the father's looking for. The grandfather, the Yitzchak, who's getting invited to the Chasna. The reason that he gets invited to the Chasna, it's meaningful to him, is because his son Yaakov is making a Suda and is inviting his father to come to the Suda. If some other guy is making a Suda and he invites, you know, his father, like, what shaykhus does he have to this other third party? That's not something that's meaningful. So he says, Sudata mochechet alav, the fact that he is giving it over, and what are they doing? They're using it for the Suda and inviting the father, it seems to suggest that what? It is. Very good question. So they have Alright, so the
don't feel guilty.
It's hard. It should be funny.
It's gonna be on the table.
You tell me that it's only America that you've done. Not for us.
Alright, so the So the Ran says that Sudata Mochechet Alav is this idea that the fact that you're serving a Suda, inviting the grandfather, right, that would only be meaningful if it was the son, Yaakov, inviting his father, Yitzchak, to the, you know, to the meal. It's another party, it's not meaningful. So the fact that it shows that this gift is not a real gift here. And it's just a circumvention of the, Right, so the Ran here formulates it a little different. It says, a person doesn't make a chasno and then give it away to someone else. Right? That's clear that he's making the, you know, when you're making a wedding, you don't just hand the wedding away. Right? Okay, so next Amud. And the Gemara says, how Gavra? Tavalei braid have a shamit kipe to kidna. Alright, so he had a son. He had a wayward son. Why the son was wayward is the subject of debate. Most of the Rishonim here point out that he was stealing some of his flax. He was stealing some of his flax, his linen. He was stealing something from his father. That was his waywardness. The other possibility, which Rashi brings down, is the Amre. So listen to this. He was trying to get out of learning Torah. He went into the family business instead of learning Torah. Right, so that's why he was a wayward son. Right, so that's the two possibilities of why the son was a wayward son. So now what does the father do? Of course, it's all solutions in their time. How do we solve a problem when you have a wayward son? What? Neither. Right? Amalei, right? He said to him, he was, father assured any hanah to the son from his possessions. So what was the Isser hanah?
It's funny because someone stealing from him, so
where
would he care about
that? All right, so we saw that earlier. I don't know if I mentioned it at the time, but it's one of the big guys. We saw earlier that here the thieves show up in the house, right? And they're going to steal all his property, and he says, this is hektish. Oh, right? Okay. He makes a nether, this is hektish. Right. So but all of a sudden the thieves say, yeah, it's hektish, we won't touch it. Right? So that's, again, I pointed out that was a very common issue where people put more emphasis on than Adam Lamakom and Adam Lechaviro.
Right.
I think we mentioned it at that mission time. Right. So we know that problem was such a problem that this isn't far from the time that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And again today, unfortunately, we see that sometimes that the emphasis on one's religious accomplishments take precedence over their fellow man. So it's over here, right?
One's perceived religious accomplishments.
Right. Right, not to say that they're not, but the emphasis on Adam Lakom and the leaving out of the Adam Lachavero can be, right, in the end, is a lack of accomplishment religiously.
It's not about ever allowed this way.
Right.
They trample all of the other people.
To get there, that's right, it's fair. So the same thing here, Gedalia would suggest that his son's stealing from him, he takes a netter, all of a sudden, I can't steal anymore. Or, if the alternative interpretation is easier, right, where he's not stealing from him, but rather he wasn't learning Torah, he was in the family business, then if he asks him in a nod, then the son's really stuck, because he's not stealing in that case, he was just, right, he was just not going to learn Torah. Alright, so now, Amrule, so they said to him, what happens if your grandson is a Talmud Chacham? Right? I mean that this wayward son has a child, and that child could be a Talmud Chacham. So what are you going to do?
When your son turns around and himself becomes a Talmud Chacham.
Right. I guess he saw that as a far-fetched conclusion, because they took the nether, right? So I'm like, oh, if that's the case, then I do want him to take possession of it. So now the Gemara wants to know, okay, they have I barbarate to Rumbi Rabbanim, Liknei Mai. If his grandson is actually a Talmud Chacham, does it work? Is he able to gift it in such a manner? I'm going to read the Ron, this the Gemara according to the Ron, because it's a typical Gemara, but I'm going to read it according to the Ron. Basically, he has two sons here. He has one son who is the goody goody, right? Does everything right, either not stealing from him, right? Or is Lomei Torah. And then the other son, who is the wayward son, right? So he basically says, I'm gifting all my property to the son who is, right, doing the right thing. So then they come and ask him, they pose a question, what happens if your grandchild from the wayward son is actually a Tzurmin D'Rabbanan? So he says like this, he reformulates his gift, and he says, listen, if he has a grandson that is a Tzurmin D'Rabbanan, then they'll split the property 50-50. But it'll skip a generation, meaning that it'll go to my good son and my wayward son's son, meaning my grandson from him. So that'll be, that's where the property will be split. If not, then all the property will go to my good son. Okay, so that's how he divides it up. That's the condition of his gift. His gift is, basically, if there's a grandchild that is a Talmud Chacham from this wayward son, then it'll be split 50-50. If there is no good grandchild from that son, then it goes all to my good son.
So it probably gets basically put it in the veins, gets put on hold.
All right, so that's the Gemara's question. Very good. Exactly. The Gemara's question, is there such thing as like an escrow account, right? That's what you're like describing. I mean, it's put in escrow for, and can you make such a kinyan? In secular law, we have some escrow accounts that have conditions, or trusts that have conditions in them. A trust is considered a party, right? And therefore, that entity can hold the property until we can determine what the outcome is. Mm. Whereas over here, by law, you need a kinyan.
Right.
So who's making the kinyan? Meaning that if it comes true later on, and then there's a grandchild that is a Tzurmin D'Rabbanan, right? The gift was given 5 years ago. right? Who's making the kinyan on the property now that it ends up in the grandchild's hands? That's the question here. So Amrei Pupidai, Koni Almanas Lahak Notu. If someone's making a kinyan conditioned solely on passing it on to another individual, that doesn't work. Meaning that the son, the wayward son's making a kinyan in it, not for himself, but for his grandchild. And any kinyan like that does not function. You cannot make a kinyan where you have no ownership in the property or where you don't have any rights to the property. It has to be where the property, the person, the recipient is making the kinyan, right? Or, right, the one who is the interim step also has some ownership in it. I mean, that his kinyan is effective because he gets it, and that it just hits for a certain period of time. So they're saying here, you cannot have someone make a kinyan where it basically skips him.
But why can't the kinyan just go through the other son?
Grandchild doesn't exist. Grandchild's not born yet.
In the future, if it...
Right. The grandchild's not born yet, and if the grandchild's not born yet, you can't make a kinyan for him because he's not there, right?
We would consider him, you know, like we had Parasam or Kilavam. He's like an extension
of the son. All right, so that's interesting. But we have Rav Nachman. Nachman Amar Kani, it does work. You're able to gift, right, in this manner where the person making the kinyan can then push the gift forward, right? That can work. Daha, what's his example? It's a very interesting, because it has big halakhic ramifications. What's the example? Taha sudra kani amanas kasu. Where we have such a vice that's used, or device that's used, is by kinyan sudar. Right? Kinyan sudar, when you sell your chametz, right, and the rav comes, what do? You take the kona takes the handkerchief, right, and the machne, right, takes it. So they do an exchange. So the rabbi holds the handkerchief, and he hands it to you. Right, and you accept the handkerchief, right? You take the handkerchief, and when you take the handkerchief, then you are makne all your property to the rabbi, right? So again, that's how it works when we sell chametz, right? A kinyan suda, right? That is a kinyan suda work. Again, the rabbi has a handkerchief, he hands it to you, you make a kinyan on it, and with your kinyan on it, you give all your property to him, or you give all your property to him. Now, this kinyan on the suda, right, is not, what is it doing? Are you really owning the suda? Is your kinyan to actually take ownership over the kinyan? No, it's to affect gemira sadas, so that your property actually goes to the rabbi, right? That you actually give a kinyan to the rabbi.
Yeah,
so what are you doing? You're kone the sudar only to facilitate your being makne your property to the rabbi. So you're not really, there's a classic example of koni almanas lehaknos, right? That's a case where you're just taking it in order to facilitate another
transaction,
right? So, and it works. So Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says two problems with what you're thinking about one, because you guys could have asked me these questions. I'm sure you're thinking them right now, these questions.
Sure.
Right? Amar Rav Ashi, what are the two problems here? Uman Lemalon de Sudra Itapis Lelo Mitpas. Say the first thing. Who says that if he wants to keep the handkerchief, he can't keep it? And when the rabbi hands you the handkerchief and you make a kinyan on it, you can walk out the door with the handkerchief.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you give it back to the rabbi, you're just being a nice guy. But the truth is, maybe you do own the handkerchief. Maybe there is a real kinyan here. And then when you make a kinyan, it's not simply to what facilitate the other transaction, but there's actually a physical kinyan. You take the handkerchief. You own the handkerchief. Right? So that might be one, which is not true in our case. In our case here, the son in the interim owns nothing because he doesn't get any rights to the property. It's all to get it to his grandson, right? That's one. Number two is both sudra kani amanat lahaknos pekani min hashto. That's the bigger difference,
today.
Which I was right.
Yeah.
I mean, the way the kinyan sudra works is that the chametz and you exist today. When you take the kinyan from the rabbi, the sudra, and then you say all my property goes to the rabbi, all your property exists, and the rabbi exists today. So you're doing the kinyan immediately. It happens as of now. Whereas by the kinyan by the grandson, when's the kinyan going to happen? It's in the future. The grandson doesn't exist now. So there's a very big difference. There's a time delay in the kinyan. There it's a little easier. It's just uncertain what's the status, right? But again, you're right. That was what we talked about the other day. There are different levels of Darash Abalul Olam, right? Because here, the person's in existence. The furthest or the most extreme is that he's not alive right now. He's not born yet. Okay? So now, the question on Rav Nachman is, and we knew this from Ksubos, we learned this together in Ksubos, that if you have a para, you make a kinyan on a para, and you say it's only working 30 days, it doesn't work.
In the swamp.
Right? And guess who said that? Rav Nachman. So we know that Rav Nachman agrees to that. So why does he say it's different here? Right? I mean, that how come Rav Nachman, who Rav Ashi is arguing and saying it's not, so you have to say that what? Rav Nachman, the Ran suggests in Rav Nachman here, the fact that you are making the Kenyan today, right, and we see that the whole way the Kenyan works is if you've said Me'akshav. So it's equivalent of you saying Me'akshav. So the fact that you Kenyan, making a Kenyan to this person who's going to be in the future, it's as if you said Me'akshav, because the fact that you are gifting it for the future, and the only way it will work is if you gift it as Me'akshav, then it's as if you said Me'akshav. Even though you didn't say it, it's as
because there's no other way for it to work.
Right, there's no other way for it to work, so that's what he says. Even though by Parah he would agree that if you make the Kenyan in the future, it doesn't work, and you didn't say Me'akshav, because there was the two cases there in the Gemara Ksuvos, where he said Me'akshav, and he didn't say Me'akshav, mm-hmm. Right? So the Rishonim discussed that, right, in those cases, whether he is a mashup. All right, so we have Rav Ashi's question. So now, Halei Nichsin, the Hadain, Le'im Ataikani. Right, when the property of this other person, of the grandchild, when is it Kani? L'chi havi bar b'reitzu medirabanan. It only works once he is a grandchild. L'chi hava hadar suja l'mari. By the time that he is a grandchild, then the Kenyan's done, meaning the sudra has gone back to its owner, meaning that there's no Kenyan. So as opposed to Kenyan sudar, like by Chametz, where everything's in existence right then, and all the Kenyanim are happening immediately. Mm-hmm. Right, so Amalei Rav Rav Nachman. So now the Gemara's going to challenge Rav Nachman's position from our Mishnah. Right? Isn't that exactly what the Matanah's Beis Koron is? Right, velokakani, it doesn't work. I mean, what he gave it over in order that he'll give it, allow his father to come to the suda. Right, so he's only being makne to the other party if you invite my father to the suda. So he's not really giving it to the, he's not really giving it directly to the other guy. He's giving it through that guy to get to the third party. And we say it doesn't work. Right, who velokakani? So Mar says zimlin da amalei mishum de suda to mochechet alav. Sometimes Rav Nachman used to answer Rava. One is because sudat mochechet alav, and that's what we said before, that it's clear by the case of the suda that he's not gifting it to the third party to make the suda. He's really gifting it to the third party to get it to his father, and it's because from him to his father, he really wants to get it to his father, not get it to the third party. And sudat mochechet alav, because otherwise there's no value, and the fact that his friend invites his. If someone asks that his grandfather, his father, from coming to suda, and then his neighbor invites his father to a suda. What does his father care? And the only point is that he invites his father to the suda, and the fact that your father is making. I think you could argue here it's different because it's for the grandchild that's being made, so there is some value to the grandfather being there, even if it's not the son making it. But I'll leave the suda aside now. So sometimes you would say suda to my Rabbi Lezer, he. And this is your question. Sometimes he would say that it was Rabbi Lezer, the Amar Afilu Vitor Osu Bimudarana, that the Mishnah of Matanah's Beis Koron is authored by Rabbi Elazar, and that even Vitor is Asur. So here, it's not exactly Vitor over here, because it's not small items, the Suda that he's inviting to him, but he's saying the fact that he's giving it to him through another party, right, so we say there that he's really only benefiting him smallly, because it's the other party that's doing it, but that, according to Rabbi Elazar, would be enough to what? To say that it's not... Right, that's not a valid gift because that small amount of anoa is still asur.
Does that in any way answer the question that the original case that we're trying to resolve over here is if his grandson becomes a chacham, he wants to gift 50% of his property to him?
Right.
In the same realm. It's the first answer. It's just like Sudasa. The fact is, he doesn't want his son to end up with the property. He wants his grandson to end up with the property.
Right. So that's what we're saying. It's an equivalent case, and we see in the mission it doesn't work. So that's against Rav Nachman's position.
So you're saying that Rav Nachman sometimes, these are answers that Rav Nachman sometimes
gives. Yeah, Rav Nachman says that the cases in our mission are unusual because the reason it's not Kona there is from another variable. It's not it's specific to Nedarim. It's a problem in Nedarim because either Suzakha Machachat Alav or Vitur Asur, which means that in both those cases he's still getting Hana. He's still getting Hana, then it violates the Nether. The way the Ron formulates it.
It's the same thing. But here he's moving on. He is Mudarana,
but he's not. The problem is not that the son's getting Hana here. The problem is whether it's a functional Kenyan. The question is not. It's clear that he's trying to get it to his grandson. If he gets it to his grandson, the son's out of the picture, and it's fine. He's saying it's a difference between. The way the Ron formulates it is a difference between a Choshen Mishpat issue and an Endorim issue. And that's what he says when he says that. the vitor is osur, right? He's not saying that this is like Rabbi Elazar. It's not really a case of vitor. Just a question that's the difference between choshen mishpat. Is a kinyan like this work? Rabbi Nachman says yes. In the Darim, we're much more strict about. The Darim have different issues, not kinyan issues, but they have different issues, which is that you've got to be clean as a whistle. You can't have any remnant of you giving it to the person, because we're more machmir by the Darim than we are by choshen mishpat issues. So when he says vitor osur, he doesn't really mean there's a vitor issue here. There's an issue that this is the Darim and not kinyan issue. If it comes to choshen mishpat, Rav Nachman says, that's cunning. All right, even in the case of Beit Korona, it would work. It's Kani, but...
If you made a king.
The problem is that it's in the Dharm here, and we're going to hold him to a much higher standard, right? Because we don't want him gifting it just to circumvent the Neda. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. And one more question on him. It's not Amru Acham and Kol Matana She'ini Yishim Higdisha Teim Deshit Enu Matana. It's not a functional Matana if you can't be Makdishit Kol Asu Yimai. What does that come to include? Kol. Any gift, what does it include? Isn't it coming to include our case here where you skip a generation? Like the case here where he stole from him or he was not learning Torah? No, it comes to include the case of the second Lashon of Rava, where even when he doesn't explicitly make the tzai or suggestion in his statement, that he's just trying to do that, and that still is not a good, that's still considered harama and doesn't work. All right, so that's the conclusion of the Gemara. I'll just say the Inyan Halacha, if you want to look quickly on the top of the next Amud, quickly on the top of the Amud, we'll do the Inyan Halacha, since again, the Gemara ends by a Adolib Shittin, right? No answer in the Gemara. So the Inyan Halacha, listen to this, man. Inyan Halacha, Zuter Kaimalang to Rav Nachman, the Sutra Kani Amanas Bahatnas, who, the way the Sutra works, Kinyan Sutra works, which is that it's a Kani Amanas Bahatnas, therefore when the rabbi gives you the handkerchief, you cannot keep the handkerchief. Right, that's not your. It's not in your rights to keep the handkerchief. To Afagav the Rav Ashi Amalei, right? Even though that Rav Ashi said it, right? Man Lemalan the Sudra Itapis Leidol Mitvas. And Rav Ashi asked the question of Rav Nachman. He said, "How do you know that he can't keep the handkerchief?" So when he says, the Rav says, "That's Dechuya Ba'almahu. That was just a Dechuya." But really, you don't keep the Kinyan Sudar when you take it. The Kamalei, well, several, you goofy. He doesn't hold with this. I'm repair coming to Dushin, and brings the proof. Ella, he skips down about 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from where we are. The beginning of that line says Kinyan in brackets there, mm-hmm. Right? It says it. He says in the middle of the line says Ella Vade Ravashi Goofy Sirely the Sutra Itafisli Makne Lomakis. You don't keep it. And here he's just trying to push Rav Nachman away, but it's not really what he believes. We hold on like him that it's not the Nachman Hafnos, but the Indian Kani Amnas Hafnos Mashman is a low Kaimalan Kavasa. We don't. That's the second question that Rav Ashi asked, which is what? What's the second question of Rav Ashi? Kinyan Sudar is immediate, whereas the other stuff's in the future. That's a real question on him. Right? Rav Ashi, Polygalate, Megamre, that Rav Ashi argues. So the first one was a Dechuya, second one is a real question on him. Here, the Kenyan's gone by the time that it wants to be effective. He says, so that's what the Ron Paskin's like this. Why Kenyan Sudar works Kani Laman the Haknos, like Rav Nachman says. But it's not, and therefore it's not Tofes. The only reason you're doing the Kenyan Sudar is to affect the transaction, and therefore when you get the handkerchief, you're not keeping it. It's just a way to have Gemir's Das, and you have to give it back. You don't get to keep it. Rav Ashi's question on him is just a push off. Rav Ashi's second question on him, that Kani Amanak Nahasnos only works by Kinyan Sudar because it's now, but it doesn't work by another, like our case here, where it's in the future, that Rav Ashi is making a full statement and it doesn't work. So we're going to pass again. No, you can't do Kani Amanak Nahasnos. Only problem is that Ramam's not Pasuk Shem Rav Nachman. Ramam Pasukim both like Rav Nachman that it works, that Kinyan Sudar, you're not Tafis, and if you can do it even when it's not a Kinyan Sudar, even when it's not Lahashta. So he says, Rav Ashi, derech dechuya keep the tivna. Right, you're going to say that since the first, since Rav Ashi was just doing him like this, like a side, like he wasn't really asking a question by Kenyan Sudar about keeping it. Just like that, we said it was just a dechuya. And we're going to say that the second line in Rav Ashi was also a dechuya. Therefore, the Rambam passed them both like Rav Nachman. Right? And he's not coming to argue. Ramban Zal, he just mentions it, doesn't mention this issue. I'm just saying that's according to the Rambam, right? The halakha is like Rav Nachman for both issues. I mean, Ramban, he says, no, the halakha is like Rav Nachman, only the issue that the Sudar is not yours, but with regards to the fact that you can do Kanim Nachman Yisnos, Lahaknos, when it's not Ashta, it's not immediate, that we don't see according to the Ram. All right, stop here. Start the new parak tomorrow.